It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning. You know, I was going to play a few other audio cuts from some of the president's defense team, but I thought that I would just so I was looking through because there was a question I was going to ask afterwards. So I was looking through and actually going through the entire. I've got the entire 9 hours and 25 minutes, including commentary in between the breaks. Here in front of me right now. And I said, okay, I can play those audio cuts later. I just want to play the last part here, which is Cipollone making his final comments.
Okay.
And then a couple comments we want to make, and then back to your calls and comments here, because we know people want to get in on the most important day of the entire impeachment process so far, because it was the first full day of the president's defense team making an all-out defense against the president and attacking the Democrats on their bogus impeachment charges. But here's the last statement that was made last night.
Majority Leader McConnell, Democratic Leader Schumer, senators, don't worry. This won't take very long. We're going to stop for the day, and we'll continue with our presentations tomorrow. But I just had three observations that I wanted to briefly make for you. First of all, thank you very much, Professor Dershowitz, and all of the presenters from our side today. I was sitting here listening to Professor Dershowitz, and believe it or not, my mind went back to law school. And I began thinking, how would this impeachment look as a law school hypothetical question on an exam? How would we answer that question? And I found myself thinking, maybe that's a good way to think about it. The question would go something like this. Imagine you are a United States senator, and you are sitting in an impeachment trial. The articles of impeachment before you have been passed on a purely partisan basis for the first time in history. In fact, there was bipartisan opposition to the articles of impeachment. They have been trying to impeach the president from the moment of his inauguration for no reason, just because he won. The articles before you do not allege a crime or even any violation of the civil law. One article alleges obstruction of Congress simply for exercising longstanding constitutional rights that every president has exercised. The president was given no rights in the House of Representatives. The Judiciary Committee conducted only 2 days of hearings. You are sitting through your sixth day of trial. The House is demanding witnesses from you that they refused to seek themselves. When confronted with expedited court proceedings regarding subpoenas they had issued, they actually withdrew those subpoenas. They are now criticizing you in strong accusatory language if you don't capitulate to their unreasonable demands and sit in your seats for months. An election is only months away, and for the first time in history, they are asking you to remove a president from the ballot. They are asking you to do something that violates all past historical precedents that you have studied in this class and principles of democracy and take the choice away from the American people. It would tear apart the country for generations and change our constitutional system forever. Question: what should you do? Your first thought might be, that's not a realistic hypothetical. That could never happen in America. But then you would be happy because you'd have an easy answer and you can be done with your law school exam, and it would be you immediately reject the articles of impeachment. Bonus question: should your answer depend on your political party? Answer, no. My second observation is that I actually think it's very instructive to watch the old videos from the last time this happened, when many of you were so making so eloquently, more eloquently than we are, the points that we are making about the law and precedent. But that's not playing a game of gotcha. That's paying you a compliment. You were right about those principles. You were right about those principles. And if you won't listen to me, I would urge you to listen to your younger selves. You were right.
Wow.
And the third observation in sitting here today, Judge Starr talked about that we are in the age of impeachment, in the age of constant investigations. Imagine if all of that energy was being used to solve the problems of the American people. Imagine if the age of impeachment was over in the United States. Imagine that. And I was listening to Professor Dershowitz talking about the shoe on the other foot rule, and it makes a lot of sense. I would maybe put it differently. I would maybe call it the golden rule of impeachment. For the Democrats, the golden rule could be do unto Republicans as you would have them do unto Democrats. And hopefully we will never be in another position in this country where we have another impeachment, but vice versa for that rule. Those are my three observations. I hope that's helpful. Those were the thoughts that I had listening to the presentations. But at the end of the day, the most important thought is this. This choice belongs to the American people. They will get to make it months from now. The Constitution and common sense and all of our history prevent you from removing the president from the ballot. There's no basis for it in the facts. There's simply no basis for it in the law. And I would urge you to quickly come to that conclusion so we can go have an election.
There you go. Pat Cipollone, his the final statements of the 9 hours and 31 minutes taking the breaks out of it. Mm-hmm. So probably what do they use? Roughly 8 hours then? Because this was 9:31. Is what I'm at right now, and this is including all the breaks.
Yeah, yeah. I think somewhere around there.
Do they use all?
I think about right at about.
They use
eight,
about eight.
I think so.
Between
yeah.
seven and eight, something like that. So probably they'll. Well, let me ask you this first. You've heard the tone of this because they've used lawyers. They've been able to because all of these people except Ken Starr. And Alan Dershowitz are completely and totally unknown. Neither of those figures viewed as politicians because they're not politicians.
Right.
Would you have a Jim Jordan speak?
That's a good question.
My sense is no, they've made the legal arguments. None of it is political.
Well, because if you do at this point, I think you take away from the performances of those legal minds on Monday. Yes. Because then it gets played back and forth. Not that Jim Jordan doesn't have a great legal mind and can't tear it down.
I agree with you completely. Right,
I don't think at this point it serves any purpose. I really don't. I think having him on the team. No doubt was a great call. The presentation, while it did get a little, well, a lot into the minutia, you know, from Dershowitz, you know, he's, again, the consummate professor. They were staying on the factual points of what we are actually looking at. Jim Jordan brings a lot of passion to it. If we're talking about the setting, well, like he was in during the committees in the House, mm-hmm. that's exactly his presentation to make and go through and tear it down. And I think he did that in a really, really great way. I think he performed really well. Having him there to, I think, probably, likely, with the team, review and go over what was going on with the testimony, taking his notes and everything else to that team was likely the greatest contribution on this side of it. I'm with you. I wouldn't necessarily present it because then, again, I think it diminishes, it takes away from the solid performance on Monday. Now, having said that, I don't know what they do on Tuesday other than a great, I think, if you line it up, the summary, probably in chronological order, you go through the steps one by one and you wrap this up in a nice, neat little package. And you try and keep, you know, I mean, Dershowitz didn't have to plain English his portion of it. But this isn't that hard. This is a very simple thing to tear down. And I think you do that and you tie up a, you know, tie it up with a little bow on top and be done on Tuesday. And I'm guessing that's what their plan is.
And the final thing is, which I'm sure what I would want would bore everybody out of their minds, but it's what I would like to see. I would like to see either a documentary, which probably doesn't exist, you know, because there is no cameras behind the scene probably, but a docudrama on when you get in this position, when the president's lawyers had to get together, when this is all over a year or two from now, what is the process of coming up with the defense and make it a lawyer show where how do you start this from day one? You made the comment earlier that it looks like every single one of the lawyers had their own particular specialty that they researched.
Yes.
That means they had a staff behind them doing it.
Exactly.
Because this was choreographed. Do not think that this was not choreographed because it was.
Oh, yeah.
And I was impressed with the choreography of the way they'd be speaking, and then boom, there it was. There's the audio, or excuse me, there's the document. There is the video, and it was extremely, extremely effective from day one, where you decide to do it. Just like anything else, when you if you decide, look, we plan this week to win the Super Bowl, you know, all the coaches in from day one. Have you ever seen any of those documentaries that have been done before? Here are the coaches together, and they all get together, and then they're all talking about what to do, and then they implement it. Then they talk to each of the coach, talks to each and every, you know, specialty coach, and then there they go out to practice, and they come back from practice. I mean, that's fascinating for somebody who's into sports. It's fascinating for people that aren't into sports to get behind the scenes. I would love to see how they put this all together. How they do it.
Yeah. I would love to see it too. I'd love Alan Dershowitz to write a book about it.
You and I would be the only ones that would watch, but not really, because I thought, look, the whole process of impeachment is fascinating from a historical, viewpoint. When you look at the reason that the House managers were not intriguing at all is because we knew what their arguments have been for the last 4.5 months.
Yeah, we've heard it.
Right, and they're bad arguments.
Yeah.
We had no idea how the president's lawyers would defend it, so this is all new. Some people, you know, would say, well, it was boring. I thought it was absolutely fascinating yesterday. I thought it was one of the most fascinating things. I was on, not on edge, but it was a popcorn day.
Yeah, no, it was. I think it was intriguing. I think it was very well executed. I think that clearly the plan came together. I love it when a good plan comes together. And it is that, but it's exactly what you need. And here's the thing, too. There really wasn't much of a show. I didn't, and this is why I think, in all due respect to Jim Jordan, because I've got a great deal of respect for him.
Or any of the other.
Or any of them.
House members
that are on that team. Because Adam Schiff and Nadler, that was a show. And what a horrible performance. The legal minds you saw at work for the president yesterday, that wasn't a show. That wasn't a show at all. That was the real deal.
It was choreographed, but it was a choreograph of the actual, it was the facts at hand. And every time that they would turn to Adam Schiff and look at him, it was based on a particular point of law or the Constitution almost consistently.
Yes.
So there maybe a little bit of show, but the show was to make a legal point. None of it was over the top hyperbole.
Well, yeah, because everything on the left has been only a show.
Look, Head in the Pike.
Exactly. This is exactly what it needed to be, and it was a demonstration by the defense team the exact way it should play out.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio. They shake their heads. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Coming up following the bottom of the hour, we'll get to your calls and comments. So if you'd like to get in, 866-90-RED-EYE. And what I viewed as the most important day of the entire impeachment process that began in September of last year, and it's because the president's defense finally had their say. Just very quickly, we need to take just a moment to look at some of the election polls. Iowa just a week from now. Let me see the latest. Emerson. Sanders 30, Biden 21.
Yeah.
Buttigieg 10, Warren 11. Mm. And that's Emerson. USA Today, Biden 25, Sanders 10. How is there a difference of 15 in a poll in Iowa?
That's a good question.
How could there be a difference? Who was completely wrong? Or is it that Democrats in Iowa have no idea and they keep changing their minds every 5 seconds? We don't know what to do.
No, it's a good question. I mean, right about this time in 2016, on the Republican side, Trump had a lead over Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz ended up winning, but the stretch there was only, and I think the polls were fairly consistent. I'd have to go back, but I remember them being fairly close. The president, then candidate Trump, was ahead by anywhere between 7 or 8 points ahead of Cruz. And one poll, I think, probably 5 or 6. You factor in margin of error, and it was pretty close, consistent. This is not.
Where Biden is leading, it's likely Democratic caucus goers. In the Emerson, they say it is caucus goers.
Yeah.
So Biden leads in the likely caucus voters. Sanders leads in caucus voters. How they differentiate between caucus voters and likely caucus voters, I don't know.
Hmm.
But there is a difference of 15 points because Sanders is up in 9 in one and Biden 6 in the other. Really?
Yeah.
Hmm. Then another New Hampshire poll came out that showed Boston Herald, Sanders up 29-22 over Biden. And then Warren 16, Buttigieg 10.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Mm.
So, as they say, Warren seems to be dropping in that particular poll. So, Sanders moving up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, he could take Iowa. He could take New Hampshire. What happens after that, though? I mean, keep in mind,
Brad Parscale starts running ads for Bernie Sanders.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, within the field, I don't know. The question, Joni Ernst had the question, okay, is the whole Biden thing going to hurt him? You know, focused on the Iowa caucuses next Monday evening.
Democrats may lie, but Democrats are concerned about Biden and what was going on.
I think they are. When it comes time to actually pull the trigger here and vote beyond Iowa, beyond New Hampshire, does this stuff wear on him and erode away at his numbers?
Listen live on our app in your app store or RedEyeRadioShow.com. Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Our favorite audio cut from yesterday comes from Robert Ray, and that's because when Ken Starr was up there, and then when you had Dershowitz up there, a lot of legalese,
mm-hmm.
right?
Sure.
You know, a lot of that. This comment totally devoid of that.
When I hear Mr. Schiff's complaint that the House's request for former White House counsel Don McGahn's testimony, grand jury material, and other documents has been drawn out since April of last year, I can only say in response, boo-hoo.
Boo-hoo!
All right, to you we go. As we have been stating, it was the day that I've been waiting for, because you wanted to see how they defended it. We had some apprehension after Saturday, especially because they seemed to not include on Saturday at all Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, and we said they have to confront that. They cannot run away from that.
Right.
And they did not.
No, they didn't.
They did not at all. So, I mean, it was as close to a slam dunk as you can get for a defense. And I do believe it put on the spot, because you can't defend the substance of their arguments. I did see, for example, you had different liberal news outlets come out and say, well, that one point they made was wrong. Mm. That wasn't true. That's a lie. Okay, take that out. Does the rest...
Right.
Still fulfill the equation? Yep.
Yep.
You can't argue the substance of what they put together.
Nope.
And that's why I've said, I was watching it yesterday, and I'm thinking to myself, maybe only Eric's thinking this, maybe a few others are thinking this, but the Bolton bombshell is really nothing compared to all of this, because they tore apart the entire case. And that's why I still say the best defense for any Republican senator saying, I'm waffling. Why are you waffling?
Why?
This is easy.
Yep.
There's nothing here. What Bolton is, what the New York Times says Bolton says in the book, if he said it, it doesn't rise to any level of impeachment.
Exactly.
You might as well put in there, well, Trump jaywalked. Well, doggone it, I'm Mitt Romney, and I need to know more about that.
Right.
I need to find out. Well, what do you have to find out? I need to find out why Trump crossed the street.
Exactly.
I'm asking that question.
What was he thinking when he crossed the street?
What was he thinking when he crossed the street? Right.
No, he's waiting for the light to change. Was he thinking about jaywalking?
So a special invitation if you want to get aboard. We've gone to a ton of phone calls tonight. If you'd like to get aboard and get your comments in, 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's head to you. We go to Michael in Illinois. Michael, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Yeah, thank you for taking the call. And again, I think you've distilled a lot of things just listening. So the Trump attorneys are brilliant and cogent. And let's say the House presenters, even if they're buffoons, they got the foot in the door. And so it all comes down after tomorrow and then 16 hours of questions, not to a vote on impeachment, but does Romney get 51 votes for witnesses?
Mm-hmm.
And if he does, can Mitch McConnell maneuver to get that done in the House, or it's stuck in the Senate?
No, that would be stuck in the Senate, and I don't believe it would take long to do whatever they wish to do. They're looking to follow the Clinton model, so... If you're worried, because we've got comments that they want to take this all the way to the election, this won't probably go another week. Even if they get witnesses, I would be surprised.
Mm.
Maybe 2 weeks if they got witnesses to get it all together. They would not be live witnesses. These would be depositions that would be done. And in the Clinton impeachment, they had no live witnesses. And those witnesses, again, it was only excerpts of the interviews that were done that were used by the House managers.
Mm-hmm.
So that would happen at that particular point. Our point is, I would simply say, send it back to the House. You don't have anything here. Even if the worst that you have, let's take it. And that's why we said yesterday when the Bolton stuff came out, Eric and I addressed this I don't know, somewhere around Thanksgiving.
Yeah,
when the
right.
whenever the Bolton question first came up, we addressed it. So it could have been a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. I don't know. We didn't keep a record of it. But if you listen to the show, you know we brought it up and we said, okay, what's the possibilities? If you listen to this show, you know we always do that. What's the worst that could happen if this happened?
Mm.
And we said nothing. Because he didn't enact anything. So all that would happen is Bolton comes out and says, yep, Trump wanted to tie all of these things to aid. Okay.
All right.
And?
Even if you got to the level of quid pro quo, which they didn't, but even if you got to the level of quid pro quo.
Still not impeachable.
Not impeachable.
But you can't get to quid pro quo because it didn't happen.
It didn't happen. You can prove with Biden, because in his own words.
He told them.
It was a quid pro quo.
Right. There was no communication. There was no communication. The Ukrainians fired, according to Biden, they fired the prosecutor because of his threat.
That's right.
That doesn't exist on the other side.
The president said, look into it.
Yeah.
No conclusion was given. He didn't say prosecute the Bidens, put them in prison. He didn't say fire this person, fire that person. He didn't say anything close to that. Look into the corruption, which, by the way, is what Zelensky ran on. He campaigned on that he was going to get rid of corruption.
So somebody should ask Romney that question.
Yeah.
Right. And if it's not, if the press won't do it, then some Republican has to do it.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Even if this is true, it doesn't rise to the level. It doesn't get you to quid pro quo. And if it does get you to quid pro quo, are you saying that's impeachable, Mitt? Why do you want this?
Right.
What are you saying is impeachable to remove from office?
Because if you go along with it based on the New York Times, like he reportedly did with a lunch yesterday with other Republicans. Well, the New York Times story now sheds some. No, it doesn't.
Doesn't
what do
shed
you
any
know
light.
About the New York Times story? What do you know about what the New York Times actually has?
And what's the goal? As I said, it's like being in a murder trial and finding out that a witness has testimony that the suspect also was speeding.
Mm-hmm. We should look into the speeding ticket,
right? That we need to look into the speeding ticket. Unrelated to the possible murder that we have no evidence for.
Right.
I mean, this is what we're dealing with. It's insane. Let's go to Nancy in Battle Creek, Michigan. Nancy, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
I just have a couple questions. With all the Democrats lying and supposedly under oath, are there any legal ramifications that can come from that? I mean, you're not supposed to lie in a court.
As was said and made the case yesterday by Ken Starr, nobody in the House is under oath.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So okay. I wanted to go to your question there because that's something that has come up before, and Ken Starr specifically addressed that yesterday.
Right.
Which we wanted to get to. So
sure.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
We go to Mark in Toledo. Mark, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hey, guys. I love your show, and I love the word logic. That's what you guys are.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
I want to know about the executive privilege that was covered Mulvaney and Bolton and these guys in the House impeachment inquiry. Does that still apply if they're called to be witnesses in the Senate trial?
Absolutely.
So they can be called and sit there and say, I'm sorry, I can't answer.
Yes.
No matter what Bolton says, I'll testify.
Well,
all he can do is legally, he cannot.
Here's the question, again, untested in an impeachment setting, is that if Bolton wrote the it's his manuscript, it's his book that he wrote. The question is not tested.
Well, isn't that under executive privilege?
There is the National Security Council. Actually, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman's twin brother is actually in charge of, if you remember, Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, and which, by the way, is also a lieutenant colonel. He is in charge on the National Security Council of approving books written by people in that position in the inner circle after they leave. So it has to be approved with the NSC. I have not seen anywhere where it has been approved.
And that's a great point. Does executive privilege apply there? I don't know. But executive privilege does not keep Bolton from just talking to anybody he wants.
Right, right.
There is no, if Bolton breaks executive privilege, he doesn't go to jail for it. There is no lawsuit for it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a protection that the president has if he decides not to follow it.
Mm-hmm.
That's up to him, you know, not to do that. But as to what he has written in the book, the claim is that by some, and I don't know because it's never, I don't think this has ever been tested in the impeachment arena. But what has been said is, well, no executive privilege doesn't apply anymore. But it doesn't matter because executive privilege is something that is the president's, not Bolton's.
Right.
And so, again, we discussed this yesterday. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't tell you.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the punishment is, because if the NSC has to approve books, I don't know. That could be some kind of almost like a non-compete that you sign as a government employee, essentially. Could be a something very binding where there is a penalty there, but I don't know of that penalty. I'm not sure, because there are tell-all books written all the time.
I don't know if the NSC is looking after executive privilege more, that they're looking after national security.
Yes, or both,
you know,
I
guess. Is something top secret.
Right, right. Yeah, you're not going to, and I wouldn't put it, well, at this point, I wouldn't expect a Bolton to divulge national secrets in a book, but write a tell-all book. Clearly there are things that he's writing. I don't know if it rises to tell all based on what, you know, the description may be, but certainly according to the manuscript that has not been published yet, according to the New York Times, I have to put all that in, they say that there were conversations with not just the president but the attorney general. So it comes down to what you have been saying, Gary, and that is, all of it, assume all of it is accurate and true, still doesn't get you there.
No. No. It doesn't get you near there, because even if there's, as we have stated before, and Dershowitz stated, even if there's a quid pro quo, mm-hmm. We're not, if you go by our standard, which is the legal standard and not the Democrat standard,
mm-hmm.
that's why we've always said, by the Democrat standard, Biden should be, you know, post-impeached. But Biden himself, if the administration was saying, you don't get the $1 billion unless you fire that prosecutor, that in itself is not an impeachable act.
Right.
Now, the GAO may get involved in it and say, well, that's against the law, but that's meaningless, because there is a remedy to that when they would go back to Congress, and then Congress would, at that point, you know, decide what to do, and then that would go to the courts.
Right.
But it's not a criminal act or an impeachable act in itself, unless you were doing it to protect your son's job and the cash flow going in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
Or unless you were doing it to protect your son from an investigation.
Right.
Then at that point, you might be able to, well, it definitely would be obstruction of justice from the Ukraine point of view.
Yeah.
You pointed that out yesterday.
Yeah.
You pointed that
obstruction
out, yes.
of Ukrainian justice.
Yes, exactly. You pointed that out yesterday. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. I've been so busy just analyzing what happened yesterday, I haven't even looked. From anybody from the White House defense team announce how long it might be today?
No.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. I'll go check for it because I just wondered, you know, what it is. What are they going to do today? Is it just going to be a wrap up? I don't know what else they have to cover. They've covered. They just decimated both articles of impeachment yesterday.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think it's, you know, I think it's summary time. I think that you come back, you put it, you know, as we demonstrated, and then you in a very progressive manner, I think chronologically too, you wrap things up, you do that summary in a chronological order, bring it up to speed, up to today, and then you make your final argument for the fact that this is bogus, it's a sham, we shouldn't be here.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, redeyeradioshow.com. We stream live or get our app and listen to us live, or you can listen at your convenience because we podcast all of our shows. In the news today,
why did Burisma want Hunter Biden on its board? Why did they want to pay him millions of dollars? Well, he did have one qualification. He was the son of the Vice President of the United States. He was the son of the man in charge of the Ukrainian portfolio for the prior administration. And we are to believe there is nothing to see here, that for anyone to investigate or inquire about this would be a sham.
In March 2014, the United Kingdom's Serious Fraud Office opens a money laundering investigation into the oligarch, Solchevsky, and his company, Burisma. The very next month, April 2014, according to a public report, Hunter Biden quietly joins the board of Burisma. Remember, early 2014 was when Vice President Biden began leading Ukraine policy.
And there you go. Pam Bondi and Eric Hirschman, devastating testimony yesterday that they gave as the House lawyers in defense of the president. And why was it devastating? Because we know that the Democrats say, no, nothing to see here with the Bidens, because the whole case is about the Bidens.
Yeah,
everything
right.
Everything here rests with the Bidens. That's why it's really incredible that the Democrats, I was watching some last night, and they're just completely ignoring it. Look, there's nothing to see here. No, it's not relevant at all. Well, of course it's relevant.
Yeah, it is.
The whole thing is based on the fact that the president, your case is predicated that the president cannot, for any reason, look at a potential opposition candidate and look at them for corruption. Well, sure you can. Sure you can. If that's your case, sure you can. And if you can't, the American people decide it's not an impeachable offense. And what the defense was doing was making the case clear that there was plenty of reason for the president to say, look, I'm concerned with corruption. And also, could you possibly look into this? Because they're bragging about the quid pro quo.
Yeah.
Biden is bragging
right.
about it.
Yes.
And so the defense actually laid out everything with Burisma and Hunter Biden. And we're talking video, we're talking documents, and they really destroyed the case. You and I were making the point yesterday that after Saturday, we said, okay, they seem to ignore Biden. Are they afraid to go there? No, they were not.
Nope.
Not at all. In fact, they hit it head on. And it does get to the point, because some of the criticism has been, and I'm sure you've heard this, and Eric and I have said, that doesn't matter whether you think it's perfect or not, is the president stating the call was perfect. And part of the criticism of the defense has been, well, no, they shouldn't be agreeing with the president saying that there was nothing wrong there, because obviously there was something wrong there. And their point is, no. With the evidence that we have here, there was nothing wrong with the president asking the president of the Ukraine to look into it, because of what we know about the Bidens and what was covered in the mainstream media, not conservative media, the mainstream media, about the suspicions that they had about Hunter Biden working for a corrupt energy company headed by a corrupt oligarch. And as we all know, the firm representing Burisma sending emails to the State Department. John Solomon broke that last month.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, could you guys lay off our client? And by the way, Hunter Biden is on the board of directors. And we've laid that out here for a while. They laid out a ton of other evidence showing that it was in the mainstream media concern. So this wasn't the president acting in his own vacuum.
No.
Where nobody had brought this up at all.
No.
And they successfully did that. Now, they did a ton of other things, too. Yesterday, you had Ken Starr get up there and talk about why he believed it was unconstitutional. And you had Alan Dershowitz, who went right to the heart of the whole John Bolton controversy yesterday. Here's this.
If a president, any president, were to have done what the Times reported about the contact of the Bolton manuscript, that would not constitute an impeachable offense. Let me repeat, nothing in the Bolton revelations, even if true, would rise to the level of an abuse of power or an impeachable offense.
And all Bolton from, again, what we're being told by the New York Times, because Bolton hasn't commented on it, as we have talked about already. And then the other allegation coming out last night, or yesterday, late yesterday, that Bolton was, I don't have the story here in front of me, Eric, but Bolton very concerned about the president and his dealings with Turkey and China.
Right. Yeah, that Bolton, and it was...
What was the language that was used, actually?
Well, in fact, the headline from the New York Times, this, again, was the Monday report on Bolton. There was a Sunday report from the New York Times on Bolton as well. Bolton was concerned that Trump did favors for autocratic leaders, the book says, and they focus on Erdogan and President Xi, Erdogan, the leader of Turkey, and the leader of China, and that he was doing favors, and Bolton was concerned about that. Look, not only that,
but it's important that he went to the Attorney General with his concerns about it.
Yes, he addressed Barr. He talked with Barr about it.
And Barr responded last night. The Justice Department responded and say that didn't happen.
Yeah, that conversation didn't go down like the New York Times is depicting it. Because and they stated, the Department of Justice, the spokesperson said, look, we don't have the manuscript in front of us, but what's being depicted by the New York Times didn't happen. That conversation didn't go that way. And so if Bolton is saying that, then he's basically applying his own views to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General does not share those views. That's the brunt of their statement here. So it countered what the Monday story was. And, of course, I mean, we haven't heard from Bolton himself. He hasn't denied it. He hasn't said anything. I'm guessing right now the directive from your attorney is to not say anything until somebody sends a subpoena for you. And then once this trial is over and you write the book or whatever you're going to do, then you can go out and you can do interviews on the book tour. But the fact of the matter is, there are some great concerns about Bolton. The National Review just had a story of, basically, saying that there's this, unjust attack on Bolton. I don't have it in front of me. Look, it's not an attack on Bolton. The question is, what does the New York Times actually have?
Right.
Bolton hasn't said anything so far.
Right. And all we've stated is if that's what he is stating and it is accurate. And we stated this, we're not really sure, 1 month and a half ago, 2 months ago, when this whole came out about getting Bolton to testify and what he might have. And we said, well, what would he possibly have? And we hit this scenario and we said, well, there's still nothing impeachable there.
Right.
Also, the defense hit, this is Jane Raskin, talking about Giuliani and the Democrats' obsession with Giuliani and how Giuliani ended up being right. Ton of criticism he took from Adam Schiff, but who was right on all these things and who was wrong?
Seems to me, if we're keeping score on who got it right, on allegations of FISA abuse, egregious misconduct at the highest level of the FBI, alleged collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia, and supposed obstruction of justice in connection with the special counsel investigation. The score is Mayor Giuliani 4, Mr. Schiff 0.
Again, no stone unturned yesterday. It was very, very compelling presentations that were put on by the lawyers for the president yesterday. I heard things like, well, Trump's afraid. You and I were addressing and we said, do we live in some type of, separate universe from what's going on in the mainstream media? And maybe we're not as big of idiots as we claim to be. Hmm. Because you and I were talking about Chris Wallace yesterday on Fox News saying, oh, you can tell by the reaction from Trump supporters, they're really nervous over this. And you and I looked at each other and went, what is he talking about? This is something that has been addressed by anybody who has been paying attention a long time ago. What might he have? And even if the story, as we have said, Dershowitz said it, and we said this yesterday before Dershowitz said it, said, look, there's nothing new here. All they're saying is Trump was blurting out that, doggone it, if Trump came out and said, and we said it this way, if Trump came out and said, John, I'm sick of what's going on here with the Ukrainians. Either they do something, or either they take care of their corruption and look into the Bidens, or I'm going to withhold aid. There's nothing impeachable about it.
Foreign aid is designed to do what?
Get influence
and access. Right. There's a quid pro quo just by the program itself is a quid pro quo. The fact of the matter is the president didn't do anything except ask Zelensky to fulfill his campaign promise. Zelensky ran on, I'm going to get rid of corruption. That was his rallying cry. By the way, he did that because it was well known, not just in Ukraine, but all over the world, the depth of corruption in Ukraine. And so that's how he won.
I believe I have from Dershowitz him addressing quid pro quo here.
All right.
All right. Here we go.
Okay. Quid pro quo alone is not a basis for abuse of power. It's part of the way foreign policy has been operated by presidents since the beginning of time.
There you go.
It's true.
I mean, it is the idea behind foreign aid.
But there is no quid pro quo.
It didn't even rise. He was saying in and of itself it doesn't. Right. But there is no, because the president didn't ask for anything definitive. Just look into it. By the way, that's about as, and he didn't say, look into it, show me the evidence of your investigation. I want to see convictions. And on the other side, by the same standard, you have Joe Biden, the lead candidate right now for the Democrats, on tape bragging that it was a quid pro quo to the effect of firing that prosecutor or you don't get the funds.
And we wonder whether we're living in a different universe, because when I was watching Bondi and Hirschman yesterday, at that particular point, I was thinking to myself, I know Eric's thinking the same thing that I am, and it was the stuff, apparently, that the New York Times put out from Bolton's book is nothing compared to this. This destroys any of that. I mean, it's an absolute slam dunk.
Right.
To the point where any Republican Congress or any Republican senator who doesn't say, wait a minute, there's nothing here. This is what Bolton has. This is what the allegation is. There's nothing here. None of this is impeachable. Look, if the president did something impeachable, House, bring some evidence to the Senate. And if it's impeachable, and it's treason, it's bribery, it's a high crime and misdemeanor, I'll be the first to say remove the president from office. But
right.
This is garbage. And so it goes back to the House. And later on, if you find out that Bolton has something, you've got yourself covered.
Yep.
Everybody can cover themselves because they say there is nothing here at this moment. House, go back and do the investigation. And if it is, then we will. Because that would be my statement for any president.
Right.
If you have the evidence of treason, bribery, high crime and misdemeanor, I'll be the first to remove them from office.
Yes.
You have nothing.
Less than nothing.
And if Romney doesn't say that, then we can lump him in with all the other Democrats. It's all a show. They don't care about the Constitution.
I don't know why you would want to appease liberals, but you need to just go ahead and change the R next to your name, Mr. Romney.
It's even more than political party. It's the fact that you're saying the ultimate law be damned.
Yes, and then begs the question, what made you think you were ever qualified to be president?
866-90-RED-EYE.
Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue says the U.S. and the European Union need to reset their trade relationship, especially in agriculture, and they need to do it.
Not in months, but in weeks.
Perdue telling reporters in Brussels,
we have to reconcile the $10 billion to $12 billion agricultural deficit with the EU. Our perspective from the United States is the EU has probably twice as many consumers with two-thirds of the arable land. Why would you expect to have a $10 to $12 billion trade deficit with the EU? We believe that some of the constraints that are here that we would like to have reconciled and resolved.
Perdue said USDA has prepared a list of those and sent it to Chief U.S. Negotiator Lighthizer. Issues such as the EU's partial or complete bans on U.S. genetically modified foods and U.S. beef raised with hormones. The EU and U.S. have failed time and again to settle those issues, but Perdue says,
we think that can be accomplished.
In Washington, Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, some of the pertinent audio, more of it coming up here following the bottom of the hour. I don't see much going on today. I mean, Dershowitz ended it last night, so they hit all the different constitutional issues on it. They were quite blunt and looked right at Adam Schiff a bunch of different times and said, you're wrong for this, in a very, very respectful way. You and I both talked about the fact, does Jim Jordan or any other of the defense team that is part of Congress, should they testify? I don't see a need for it, because everybody who has gone before, except for Dershowitz and Ken Starr, are really unknown. And Ken Starr is unknown, and Dershowitz is an academic who voted for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
And so you can't make the case that it is the partisans that are making the argument. The argument was so well done yesterday, I can see wrapping it up maybe in 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah,
go through
so.
Everything you've gone through the first couple of days and then end it.
Here is your forecast.
A series of storm systems will bring rain and snow across the Northwest over the next few days. The coastal ranges and valleys of the Pacific Northwest could see locally heavy rainfall above 3 inches through Wednesday morning. Higher elevations of the Cascades should see snowfall amounts over a foot, while the Northern Rockies and Wind River Mountains and Tetons may see snow approaching a foot. This morning, rain showers and some thunderstorms will engulf much of central and eastern Texas, but a wintry mix of snow and freezing rain is possible for the Texas Panhandle and portions of Oklahoma northward into the Central Plains. Snow and freezing rain amounts will generally be light, but could still lead to slick travel conditions in spots. High temperatures today could be more than 20 degrees colder than Monday across Oklahoma and West Texas. Rain today in the south into the southeast, mostly dry and quiet through the midsection of the country and the east. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Russian Assets, Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
I'm Gary, he's Eric, 866-90 Red Eye.
That's false, we're Ukrainian assets.
Yes. You know, I was thinking what to play. I mean, what would be the audio cut of the day to play?
Boo-hoo!
Actually, no. Even though it was our one of our favorites from yesterday, just because it was unique for the kind of presentation that they're doing.
Yeah,
you know, you didn't when
right.
you said boo hoo, but I thought that when I started thinking about it, I said, you know, something. It all started. Everything started turning. I went through when Ken Starr was there. I'm like blah 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 blah, and I knew he made great points in the last 15 minutes. But you're giving a history lesson, and frankly, at that point, I don't want to hear a history lesson. I want to hear you going after a bogus impeachment and bogus articles of impeachment.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
And I want you defending the president based on what the Constitution dictates, you know, what the Constitution dictates is impeachable, but get to the specifics of it. And the one specific, the thing that you and I talked about yesterday, we've talked about it before, is that they have to hit directly. You've got to make the case that the president looking at the Bidens was legit. We said it was.
Yes.
We needed the defense to officially do it. And this is where it started. This is where everything changed yesterday. This is where the Bolton bombshell, this is where the beginning of that started falling apart, where it's like, oh, okay, it doesn't matter. They're starting to make the case right now that the president looking into Burisma and Joe Biden and Hunter Biden is legit. Now, we can't play the whole thing. She talked for over 30 minutes, so obviously we don't have that. But I just want you to hear at least a couple of minutes in the very beginning of it, of how it all started, because I knew about a minute in, I went, uh-oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe less than a minute and maybe just 10, 15 seconds, and I said, uh-oh, here we go. All right, where's this going to go? And after she was done and after Hirschman was done, I was like, whoa. I mean, that was slam dunk. But here's the beginning of it.
When they submitted their brief, they repeatedly referenced Hunter Biden and Burisma. They spoke to you for over 21 hours, and they referenced Biden or Burisma over 400 times. And when they gave these presentations, they said there was nothing to see. It was a sham. This is fiction. In their trial memorandum, the House managers described this as baseless. Now, why did they say that? Why did they invoke Biden or Burisma over 400 times? The reason they needed to do that is because they are here saying that the president must be impeached and removed from office for raising a concern. And that's why we have to talk about this today. They say sham, they say baseless, because they say this because if it's okay for someone to say, hey, you know what? Maybe there's something here worth raising, then their case crumbles. Because they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that there is no basis to raise this concern. But that's not what public records show. Here are just a few of the public sources that flagged questions surrounding this very same issue. The United Kingdom's Serious Fraud Office, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent, Hunter Biden's former business associate, an ABC White House reporter, Good Morning America, ABC, The Washington Post, The New York Times, Ukrainian law enforcement, and the Obama State Department itself. They all raised this issue. We would prefer not to be talking about this. We would prefer not to be discussing this. But the House managers have placed this squarely at issue, so we must address it. Let's look at the facts. In early 2014, Joe Biden, our Vice President of the United States, led the United States foreign policy in Ukraine with the goal of rooting out corruption. According to an annual study published by Transparency International, during this time, Ukraine was one of the most corrupt countries in the entire world. In Ukraine, there's a natural gas company called Burisma. Burisma has been owned by an oligarch named Mykola Solchevsky. Here's what happened very shortly after Vice President Biden was made U.S. point man for Ukraine. His son, Hunter Biden, ends up on the board of Burisma, working for and paid by the oligarch Solchevsky. In February 2014, in the wake of anti-corruption uprising by the people of Ukraine, Solchevsky flees the country, flees Ukraine. Solchevsky, the oligarch, is well known. George Kent, the very first witness that the Democrats called during their public hearings, testified Solchevsky stood out for his self-dealings even among other oligarchs. House managers didn't tell you that. Ambassador Kurt Volker explained that Burisma had a, quote, very bad reputation as a company for corruption and money laundering, end quote. House managers didn't tell you that. Burisma was so corrupt that George Kent said he intervened to prevent USAID from co-sponsoring an event with Burisma. You know what this event was? It was a child's contest, and the prize was a camera. They were so bad, Burisma, that our country wouldn't even co-sponsor a children's event with Burisma. In March 2014, the United Kingdom's Serious Fraud Office opens a money laundering investigation into the oligarch, Solchevsky, and his company, Burisma. The very next month, April 2014, according to a public report, Hunter Biden quietly joins the board of Burisma. Remember, early 2014 was when Vice President Biden began leading Ukraine policy. Here's how Hunter Biden came to join Burisma's board in April 2014. He was brought on the board by Devin Archer, his business partner. Devin Archer was college roommates with Chris Hines, stepson of Secretary of State John Kerry. All three men, Hunter Biden, Devin Archer, and Chris Hines, had all started an investment firm together. Public records show that April 16, 2014, Devin Archer meets with Vice President Biden at the White House. Just 2 days later, on April 18, 2014, is when Hunter Biden quietly joins Burisma, according to public reporting.
There you go. I just wanted to play that part right there. And as I'm watching this, and then Hirschman afterwards with their testimony, and it went on for over an hour. I mean, hers was about 31 minutes. I sat there and went, wow, are we doing the boomerang again?
Yeah, right.
Where it comes right around, and, you know, what they accuse the president of doing is what they actually get caught doing, you know, on their own. We see this with the Mueller investigation, where now who's under investigation? Who's under criminal investigation right now? The law enforcement officials that were in charge of investigating Donald Trump.
Look, you look at the Russiagate thing, okay? So what was happening there? What was the dynamic there that made those individuals, those players within that, Peter Strzok, Comey, any of them that may have been involved along the way, illegal surveillance,
bogus warrants
that were not they weren't properly predicated, that we're learning more and more about that. What was the common factor leading up to Election Day? What was the driver? What gave them that sense of maybe false sense of security? She was going to win. He was never going to win. They were going to get away with it. Now you look, jump forward to impeachment. Because as the Washington Post pointed out, the one of the whistleblowers actually reported that White House counsel moved to, after the phone call with Zelensky, have the transcript of that phone call moved to a classified server. I believe that gave them a false sense of security. They ran to Adam Schiff's office as a so-called whistleblower, leaker, and Adam Schiff thought, because again, he had cover, it would never see the light of day.
If he doesn't release his taxes, he'll never release this.
He'll never release this. They wouldn't release something that's already been put on a classified server. He'll never allow that to happen. He may argue via Twitter, but he's never going to, oh, no, he released the transcript. You know, with the whole Mueller thing, and in November of 2016, it was, oh, no, he won. All these things where they were underestimating who the guy is or what the dynamics were in terms of the play. Because does he look like he's flinched at all? If they'd been coming at me like this whole time, I'd be furious.
Yes,
I'd be flying off the handle, and I would make him look like a saint compared to how I would react to that. Yeah. And that's the whole thing. They had that false sense of security in both situations, I believe, and now they're here. And because of that false sense of security, it's coming back to haunt them. As you mentioned, Gary, the boomerang effect once again.
Yeah, and, you know, Pam Bondi laying out everything right at the beginning, saying, look, here's all the media that has covered this and goes through all the mainstream media outlets out there that covered and were concerned about Biden working for Burisma while his father is vice president in charge of the United States, point man in charge of the anti-corruption effort. They knew about it.
Yep.
And so she made that solid point right in, and it just destroyed the Democrats' case completely yesterday.
I'll tell you this, after Bondi, if I'm Joe Biden, I'd be a little bit, or maybe a lot of bit, nervous.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Shell recently launched Shell Rotella T6 15W40 full synthetic. Megan Pinault is Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager and tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
We are excited to launch this new full synthetic Shell Rotella T615W40. This is the first time we have a full synthetic in 15W40 viscosity range. We know that truckers love 15W40. That is the primary viscosity grade used in the U.S. and Canada and really in many parts of the world as well. So our customers can enjoy some of the benefits of cold temperature properties, low temperature and high temperature, allowing for the oil to flow faster into the engine and protect it better. Having a full synthetic also allows for extended drain opportunities for those that are trying to push the limits a little bit. But we always recommend following their manufacturer recommendations and doing oil analysis to ensure that they are changing when appropriate.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
Red Eye Radio, he is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Now, if this whole impeachment thing hadn't been going on, I would have mentioned today, and as I will right now, anyone who grew up where I did, January 28th, 1977.
Oh, boy.
January 28th, 1977
it, huh?
through February 1st, 1977. History Channel called it the Wrath of God.
Wow.
The Blizzard of 77.
All right, you were telling me, because your parents still live there.
Yes.
That the lake isn't frozen.
No, it's not frozen.
And that sets up potentially, if they had a snowstorm, that could set up a really,
yes.
really big snowstorm.
If you had an Arctic front move in the right direction at the right time, massive, because some of the cold fronts that move in this time of the year off Lake Erie are huge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, the cold fronts that come down from Canada
right.
are huge. They
right.
come across a Lake Erie that isn't frozen, or any of the lakes, anybody in Michigan on the eastern side of Michigan, they've felt it.
Wow.
Southern yeah. side of Lake Ontario.
Is that the lake snow effect? Is that
yes,
what they call it?
That's lake snow.
Wow.
Effect.
And those are some fairly sizable lakes.
Yes. Yes, they are.
They're great, in yes. fact.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.